the time we called him Kobe workouts, where in the preseason, not his freshman year, sophomore year, he heard Kobe did his nighttime workouts. So basically in between lift and pickup Saturday, he would come in and work out 9 o'clock at night, 2 in the morning, 7 in the morning, and get 3 workouts in between the lift and the pickup.
Welcome back to another episode, Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison. Here are my boy. He living good in PR. Naruto Perdomo. We got a great episode for you guys today. Actually, bro, I didn't tell you we were going to do this, but we've been keeping a little competition. And I don't think you did your 40 push-ups, bro. I've been waiting for you to uphold the bet. yeah, let me see you get them in. While you're lagging a little bit, but while you're doing those push-ups, making up for the bet, we're going to talk about some Tom Thibodeau. You're a Knicks guy, so just got rid of your head coach. And I feel like I'm seeing a lot of people on the internet kind of confused or surprised that Tibbs got fired. You know, conference finals for the first time in 25 years for the Knicks, 2 wins away from a finals experience. I have my own thoughts about it. I'll go real quick while you still getting them in. But, bro, it's like Jeff Teague said it perfectly earlier that Tibbs really don't be coaching, bro. He's just out there kind of. And when you look at the sideline or the camera pans over, it's not Tibbs calling over one of his guys and making an adjustment. You saw the whole series. He didn't make any adjustments to a fast pace, good set run by the Indiana Pacers. He was just letting the Knicks do whatever, basically. So it's not surprising to me that Tibbs, you know, got fired. You can't be in your however year coaching and just now starting to make substitutions to your bench. Like that's in May, his first adjustment was to trust his bench. Like those are things we should be working on throughout the all season. You're a head coach in the NBA, but I think Tibbs is he gets guys' motors going. You know that his teams are going to play hard. And those type of coaches, I think they're really good for like assistant positions. You know, you're not expected to look at the game at such a high level. You're basically just there for the motivation or to see little things in a guy's jump shot or something like that. But when it comes to game to game or in game adjustments, the most important part of coaching, I'm not sure Tibbs is the guy for that. And Ruta lagged out, but also fans, it's weird because the Knicks have been used to like beyond mediocrity or below that. So now they get a taste of like a little bit of success, and fans don't like mediocrity anymore. They were fine with it these all 20 years. They were just suffering, but they were fine with it, whatever the team was doing. But now when you see, oh, we actually do have a chance to be really good or something special, then it's we gotta switch a little bit up. So, I mean, Tibbs, historic coach, but also another point is a lot of players claim or have shown to be unhappy throughout his system. You talk about guys like Derrick Rose or Jimmy Butler having major injuries playing under him, but also we see in it this year, Mikal didn't seem, and he said publicly a few times, like, oh, I'm playing too many minutes or I'm not getting the ball enough. So that's another important part of coaching. And that's 4 minutes of me just talking about Tibbs. I really wanted to hear Ruta's perspective, but I'm still waiting for him. I'll get into the finals experience or the finals predictions and breaking that down a little bit. Thunder versus Pacers, as you can see in my background, I'm a Thunder fan, big Thunder fan. This one's really personal because I've been through some dark days being a Thunder fan, seeing the ups and downs of tanking and, you know, making it to the finals, then losing your superstar. It's been a tough few years being a Thunder fan, but now we're kind of at the pinnacle. This is one of the greatest seasons we possibly will ever see if they cap it off in a dominant final series. But Pacers are really good, And I'm not going to ignore that. I've been saying that, too, from the beginning of the playoffs. I'm a big Rick Carlisle guy. I think he runs really good sets for the NBA, like little things, a double drag at half court. It's killing teams right now because it's tough to, you know, you're so focused on your offense or attacking different matchups that you lose sight that a simple double drag can be really effective, letting your playmakers playmake. And he's doing other sets too, but I think this is a big series for Mark Daigneault too on the other side in terms of scouting purposes, but what adjustments he's going to be making game to game, because the Pacers are they have the ability to get hot real quick. The way that the Thunder are good, Rudy's back in. The way that the Thunder are good is they turn teams over, and it could be, you know, a 2-point game. You look up, now you're down 12. And the Pacers are kind of the same way. Like, you, 2-point game, they get out and run a few times, hit three threes in a row, and again, you're double digits now. So it's going to be a good series. Rude, I'm talking finals right now. You could give some Tibbs thoughts, because I did like 4 minutes just talking about Tibbs. But finals, I got the Thunder. I'll say my prediction. I'll go Thunder in five. I'll give it gentleman sweep. I don't see how the Pacers get more than one, but I think every game's going to be competitive. But talk to me about whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah. First, apologies for the lag. You know what? My computer was just bugging for a sec, but I did like 30. I'll owe you like 10 more. But with the Tibbs firing, I think a lot of Knicks fans respect Tibbs. You know, we respect Tibbs because, you know, I remember when Jose Calderon was our starting point guard and I was trying to convince myself that we were going to be good when I was, you know, 13, 12 years old. You know what I mean? But then you go from that to Jalen Brunson is, you know, bro, just that Knicks series was just so, it was like euphoric almost, because it's like, damn, bro, like I'd never, like everybody counted us out and we, you know, made it to the ECF and everyone's like, oh, that's a Knicks championship, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, we were happy, you know what I mean? F you, Celtics fans, we were happy that we made it there. And
yeah, for 25 years.
That's what I'm saying. And like, we're trying to build some over here, you know what I mean? We're trying to change the culture, and Tibbs really changed the culture of the New York Knicks. And I'll forever respect Tibbs. But I think you're right, KJ. I think, you know, he didn't make a lot of adjustments during this series, right? It kind of felt like, you know, once we got past the Celtics, it was like, oh, all right, we good now. Like, we're going to be good for the rest of the playoffs. Obviously, I'm not in the locker room of the Knicks, so I don't know what their headspace was, but that's what it kind of looked like. Like, the adjustments weren't as severe, I felt like, you know what I mean, as in the Celtics series. Like, Pacers, we felt like we could play our game and kind of, you know, beat them. But really, the Pacers are a well-coached team, and we kind of got out-coached because, in my opinion, you go player for player, we're better, at least starting lineup, than the Pacers. You know what I mean? And, yeah, they have guys coming in off the bench, but like you mentioned before I lagged out, like, you have to build up your bench, like, throughout the season. You're not supposed to be playing DeLon Wright in game two or game three when we're down 2-0. Like, that's not what's supposed to happen. You're supposed to play Kolek, you're supposed to play Shamit, and, you know, those games where Brunson could sit out a little bit for a little bit longer and let them get, you know, adjusted to your system. And, you know, Tibbs never did that. He stuck true to his guys. And when it came to the offense, it's like, yeah, like, Brunson can go at anyone and play one-on-one with anyone, and Cat can go at most bigs. It's like, how are we getting OG involved? How are we getting McCall involved? Because for a lot of the possessions, it was like, it just felt like they were running, like, you know, a play for Cat where it was like, you know, they set a screen for him into a post up, or it was, you know, Brunson coming off two screens to the corner and then he's playing one-on-one, you know, on the corner of the wing, rather than, like, really, like I said, getting everyone else involved. So if they can find a coach that can utilize OG's talents, can utilize McCall's talents, can utilize Cat and Brunson together, I think that will be, you know, beneficial for them. I'm hearing a lot about Johnny Bryant. He's really the hot topic when it comes to the Knicks So I'm not too sure about his schemes, or, you know, I know he used to work for the Knicks as an associate head coach for some time, but we'll see what happens, bro. This part of the process is kind of nerve wracking for me because you know, we've made changes every offseason. So whether it be team, on the staff, you know, medical training side. So we'll see. As a Knicks fan, I'm excited, but I'm also like kind of anxious to see what they do. Yeah. When it comes to the finals,
just floating a name. If Jay Wright wants to get back into coaching, that could be a possibility. I heard somebody say it earlier, but I was like, that actually sounds pretty good because all the Nova guys on the Knicks already. Jay Wright, one of the best basketball minds in the world. So just something to float out there.
The only thing that scares me is that the Knicks have done the college to NBA thing with Pitino before. And granted, Pitino and Jay Wright are two very different coaches, but it scares me a little bit just with hiring a coach, especially because like the Knicks really have like their window is like 2 to 3 years, really.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not like the Thunder, where like the Thunder are really built to last. It's really the Knicks have the next 2 to 3 years to really capitalize on this team. So for me, like, I don't know if they should be experimenting with like coaches like that. You know what I mean?
Fair, 100%.
But
Yeah,
no, I think, you know, I'm a huge Thunder fan this series. You know, I've really every game that Tyrese Halliburton's been posting a mix after every series that they win, and every time the Thunder win a game this series, I'm gonna be tagging the guy that makes the mixes and making and telling him to make sure he puts clips of Tyrese getting killed by Shea. But yeah, all jokes aside, though, I'm a huge Thunder fan. This series, Thunder and five, you know what I mean. I don't think they got nothing for him.
Yeah, I don't know the Pacers. Like you said, their lineup, and I could say the same thing to Thunder. Like we just have a better, like a way better player at every position. But I don't even think it's boiled down to just like player to player who's better. I think that a lot of the Pacers, like, play style and strength, the Thunder can match. A lot of teams aren't used to playing fast or getting back on defense, right, waiting. But, like, we are probably second in pace. I haven't looked at the stats enough. But we get just as much fast break opportunities. We're young enough to play fast. And but I won't lie. Like, I think this is a really even series just by the Pacers. You know, I think they average like 28 assists per game in the playoffs. That's a historical number. They're shooting 50-40 from the field, which is another like probably historic number. But I don't know. I just think like Lou Dort, I don't think Tyrese Halliburton is ready for that type of defense. It's a lot different when you get to, you know, play not free because Mikal's a good defender, but Lou Dort's first team, and then if you get a screen and then Alex Caruso's got to come up, if you set another double drag and Jalen Williams is your defender, it's a lot of trouble, basically. So I think it's going to be a good series, but tell me your prediction. You said Thunder and five?
Yeah, to add on to that, like, you know, when TJ McConnell's going to be out there, it's not going to be, you know, DeLon Wright guarding him anymore. It's going to be Cason Wallace. It's going to be, you know what I mean? It's going to be a little bit different defenders for these Pacers role players. So we're going to see how good they are this series. Thunder and five, though, for sure.
I have been seeing a Tyrese troll, though. Like, I saw you comment on one of them.
Bro, I'm tagging the guy that does his mixes, bro. You think I'm joking? I'm tagging and be like, yo, make sure you put this in the mix. Fuck out of here.
Nah, but last Thunder point, second best net rating of all time throughout this season. So this is a team that a lot of people were critiquing, and I remember everybody's name that was, you know, not really giving the Thunder credit when I was trying to say, yo, this is a special team. But now it's in front of your face. Everybody's seeing it. But that's 14 minutes. We haven't even talked about today's episode. We got Coach Josh Merkel, Coach Merkel over at Randolph-Macon, having a really successful career so far. 10 seasons, 7 times ODAC Coach of the Year, one of the best conferences in Division III, won a national championship in 2022, has coached a lot of really good guys. But, I don't like saying this about every single coach that we have on the pod, but this is definitely one of the smartest basketball coaches in the country, I think. But both of us listened to some of his podcast interviews, and both of us are like, wow, this guy's crazy smart when it comes to, like, philosophies, quotes, whatever the case may be. He's a really good coach, gets his guys to lock in. But I want to hear your opinions talking with Coach Merkel, getting him on the pod, all that.
To add on to, like, how smart he is as a basketball mind, I think he's just, like, a great, great human. Like, he's just a great person. You know what I mean? Like, I just felt the energy from him as soon as he joined the pod, bro, as soon as he started the conversation. Like, you know, viewers are going to see how the conversation took a turn. A little bit, we did things a little bit differently second half of the episode with this, you know, with Coach Merkel. And I had a great time talking to him, you know, talking about his journey when it came to coaching, right? Talking about how he uses constraints in his practice, talking about how he's building the culture at Randolph-Macon. And he's truly built, you know, a winner. You know, they won, you know, the Natty, if I'm not mistaken, in 2022. So just off of that, like, he's already, you know, solidifying himself as one of the best coaches in the country. You know what I mean? And it was just a great conversation with him, man. It was really, you know, helpful as a coach. It was really helpful as a young aspiring coach to hear different perspectives, to hear, you know, how he runs his program. And it's cool. It seems like they run it like all, it's like a family almost, like it's a family atmosphere. And I really, you know, I really mess with that, honestly. But definitely a great conversation with Coach Merkel, and I'm excited for the viewers to get to know him.
Facts. Coach Merkel was talking I think this was his first answer talking of, and I got a quote from him that was, like, really inspiring. But some of the other phrases or just sayings that he uses throughout his program, I could see why they're so good. He said something about, like, not having or having low expectations is bad for people. And when I listened to that, I was thinking, yo, what I'm doing in my life right now, I need to raise the bar instantly. So I feel like this is a good episode for just the neutral viewer, not even just a basketball fan, just a random person could probably like this episode a lot. Because even you and I were given, when he was asking us questions, we were given good responses too. So I think this is a good episode. But I was just writing down some of his philosophies or, you know, quotes, and bloom where you are planted. Like, we both love that one, bloom where you're planted. So it doesn't matter where you are in life right now, just be the best possible version of yourself there. They talk about truth or harmony, and I think that's good for, like, relationships too, not even just, you know, in basketball, but when you're talking with a girl or a guy, do you want truth or harmony? The three C's: connect, commit, compete. Like, I could just go on and on about everything that's powerful throughout this episode, but throughout his program too. So this is a really good episode. I don't know if you have extended thoughts though.
Yeah, I mean, that year that they won the 2022 national championship, first in assisted turnover ratio, second in scoring defense, fifth in field goal percentage, right? Overall, all time as a head coach, 291-91. He's a dog, man. So Coach Merkel, really, really, and like you said, bloom where you're planted. We both love that quote. But he's just a great coach, man, and it's awesome to hear. And it's also kind of interesting too to hear, you know, his own perspective on his impact at Randolph-Macon, because they've only had, you know, five coaches in this program, right? So it's a high honor to be the head coach of this, because you don't see that, five coaches in an athletic program. That's not normal in today's college, you know, landscape. So to hear how he's thrived over this time is also good for me too. So really great episode, bro. It's going to be good.
You talk about, I think you mentioned this a few times, like, respect from your peers is the greatest compliment or like accomplishment. And Kimbrough was telling me that RMC arguably has the most successful / dominant decade in any division of college basketball. So this is in front of us. We're seeing a dynasty almost. They're consistent, always dominating in the ODAC. They're always making some noise in the tournament. And Coach Merkel has a certain edge to him. You guys are going to see it in the episode. He got mad a few times, like, not actually mad at us or anything, but just you could see in his eyes us talking about the national tournament this year and like him getting a little fiery over that end. You know, like I like coaches like that. They're straight to it and no games being played. So Coach Merkel's definitely a really good coach. But
when you I didn't mean to cut you off, bro. When you talked about how like they had a really good year this year, and then Coach Merkel's like, yeah, I feel like it's slipping a little bit. You know what I mean? And then you're like, you won 20 games. Like you're like that's an accomplishment a lot of coaches don't get, man. So yeah. it's cool to hear the standard that he carries for himself. It's inspiring for sure.
Yeah, low expectations not good for nobody. They're trying to compete for Natty every year. If you don't get to that spot or win the ODAC, then not that it's a failure, but in his eyes, it's like we got work to do. So let's hear from Coach Merkel. Also, go follow our socials at Not Even D2 on Instagram, X, TikTok, all that. We got some big things coming up, so make sure you stay up to date with everything Not Even D2, but let's hear from Coach Merkel.
Comment too.
Facts. All right, we are here with our guy, Coach Merkel. How you doing today, Coach?
I'm doing great, fellas. How you guys doing?
Doing real good, Coach. We appreciate you getting on the podcast. It's going to be a great episode. I had a quick, you know, little small talk question for you. I was listening to a podcast with you. You were on the podcast Basketball Immersion, I believe.
Yeah.
And you talked about how at the start of every season, you're kind of like rusty a little bit, let's say, right?
And yeah.
I'm wondering, I know obviously you can't really coach over the summers, but is there anything, any other activity you're doing that maybe sharpening your skills a little bit, or just talk to us about that? I'm interested.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's a small talk question you're throwing at me. Like, hey, we know you're not very sharp to start the year. You caught me in that. I would say, like, I am trying to be dialed in on the film. Because, you know, where your focus goes or where your energy goes, your focus grows. But that can be tough. So, like, my thing is, like, do it in the morning before the day gets started. I got 3 little kids, 9 and under. And I can be good at that, but then I got to get my run in this morning, and I had to shift my day. So it's like I've got it on my calendar. Make sure I watch. I caught, like, at least 25 minutes. And what I'm doing with those 25 is synergy, pull out, like, the best of clips, and I'm making a file. So I got it from Coach Morrell, UNC Asheville, heck of a coach, and he talked about that was part of his process after the season. He would basically watch a half a day, where he doesn't have to feel like he did it all at once. Not a big project, no different than, you know, the 1%. Like, what is one thing each day that you can do to maybe sharpen the saw? So that'd be one root of that. And then camp, I try to be really involved with camp and coach my coaches, and you know, that's another way. But it can't just be watching NBA, which is going on right now, because the other thing I would say is we tell guys, when you see a lot, you see very little. If you're just watching the game, you don't really notice things. But when you see a little, when you focus your attention, you can see a lot. So we talk about that a little bit.
That's gold right there, especially and another thing about the NBA is I feel like it's a lot different than college. I mean, there's some similarities, but the way that the game is played right now is a little bit different. But I was gonna hold this off till late in the conversation, but like the interview Ruta just mentioned, but also like you just mentioned a coach that you're taking from, I feel like that's something you're really good at, is just like studying other coaches, hearing from other coaches to improve your coaching style. So I know that this list could probably go on and on, but who are some of the coaches that you're taking some philosophies or concepts from?
Yeah, man. Appreciate that. You guys ask great questions. I've become a fan too. I've been listening to some episodes. Like, there's not enough hours in the day to listen to all the guests, but you guys have had some big time guests on there. It's been neat. Yeah. Still listening to the Brandon Linton one, which was awesome. My guy at Hopkins is Ryan Kane is an awesome dude, and just have enjoyed it. And Henry Vedder, you guys did a great job talking to Henry. But when you talk to Henry, I feel like we were this close. It was us and Trinity, and we couldn't win out. But he was on campus, and man, he broke my heart, and I'm paying the price, man. We can't get back there. He's been there twice. So, but to answer your question, the growth mindset has been really big, and it probably just goes back to, like, Me, I'm an underdog type guy. Grew up on a farm, oldest of nine. Not really athletically gifted. Now, I don't want to shortchange it. Like, I'm just not a, you know, super athlete. But I like to be active, and I can still keep up with my guys and things like that. But basically, that underdog has made me, like, I've got to keep finding an edge. And so the learning piece was big growing up. And then also didn't play Division I. You know, I had a solid college career. I wish it would have been a little bit better. You know, I was probably like average 9 a game throughout my career, but never quite an all-league guy. So anyways, it just all comes into that underdog. Didn't really come from a coaching tree per se. But then back to influences, my high school coach would be in the high school coaching Hall of Fame, Stu Vetter, and Kevin Sutton was my JV coach. So I don't know if you guys know Kevin, but he's been all over, big-time coach. And that was my, like, 4 years I played for him. And he was a big player development guy. So, I mean, I would work out with him during the lunch period. You can ask him. It's like we had a 40-minute period. I'd get changed real quick. And my private school, so we got to wear polo and khakis. And shoot, in the winter, it was a tie. So it was like, take the clothes off real quick, 5 minutes, get out there for a 30-minute workout, and eat my sandwich in my sixth-grade algebra class because Miss Duncan would let me. There was 1 year where the sixth-grade teacher wouldn't let me. Anyway, I had a big-time influence with those guys because it was basically a college program, 11 months a year, plyometrics and agilities. And like, you had to earn, like we did on the weight room, you'd have like the 250-pound club if you could bench. Like, everything was measured. Every single shooting drill number was being kept track of. And I'm talking like ninth grade year. So I fell in love. My mom played basketball at Maryland. So I would say that was a big influence. And she loves to play still. Like, she's 71. But she'll still go play. She's a big pickleballer now.
Shout out to her.
I saw how much she loved it. I would go with her to, like, her women's league games. So that was a big influence. And then so I go from Stu Vetter. I play at Salisbury for 4 years to I'm high school coach for three. Like, that's what I wanted to be. You know, I saw the impact Kevin Sutton had on me. And but I got the opportunity to go with John Beilein to West Virginia. So that was a huge influence. And then not only that, but Jeff Neubauer was Beilein's top assistant. We go to the Elite Eight. Neubauer gets the job at Eastern Kentucky and takes me with him. So I think I was a 26-year-old at the time, getting to be a D1 assistant. Just incredible when you think about it. I'm a D3 guy that's coaching high school that gets the one GA that they had at West Virginia at the time. Because now you might have some schools that have more than one. At the time, it was just like one. It was like even the ops guy couldn't get on the floor, but I got to be the GA and be on the floor. So it was amazing. I always say I got my PhD from Coach Beilein in that 1 year. And we can get into that a little bit, too, because he's amazing. But Beilein, Neubauer, big, huge influences. You can see it in how our teams play still. And then Nathan Davis, who I worked for here for a year, also had a huge influence and part of that Randolph-Macon coaching tree. Where I learned a lot in that 1 year, how to run a successful Division III program.
Word. That's special. There's a lot of influence throughout your career. That's good that you can remember all of it too. But one thing that you just mentioned, like briefly, the coaching tree at Randolph, and I was talking to Coach Kimbrough this morning about it. Actually, he was saying how, like, you're obviously a big-time coach. Mike Rhodes is at Penn State right now. One of your assistants last year went to Mount St. Mary's, correct?
Yep.
So there's just something special in Randolph. So, like, if you could put it into words, what goes on at Randolph, what allows these coaches to, like, move on and be successful, go on to high-majoring coaching?
Yeah, and we got to add to Randolph-Macon, not to be confused with Randolph College, which is in our league, which this is a crazy thing, KJ, but somebody just posted, I get a text like, hey, did so-and-so commit to you guys? And I'm like, no, I don't know that name. Well, the kid posted that he committed to Randolph-Macon, but it's Randolph. It's like, oh no, that's embarrassing. So just for any listeners that aren't, you know, Kimbrough knows, but for anybody that doesn't, Randolph-Macon is different than Randolph. And the ODAC has been a great league to compete and to learn from. But then if you go to the coaching tree, yeah. I mean, there's just been five coaches here since 1956. And I think it speaks like we were Division II up until the early 80s. So a strong winning tradition and really good, like played in the national championship game in 77. So you've got a rich history of some really good players and coaches. You know, Paul Webb, who was the first coach in the 50s, went on to Old Dominion. Hal Nunley was a legend here, College Hall of Fame, Virginia Hall of Fame, and he was here for 24 years before he retired and turned it over to Mike Rhodes. And then Mike Rhodes to Nathan Davis to me, and each of those coaches connected to the coach before him, because I worked for Nathan, Nathan played for Hal. And I would say not just the coaches, but that also connects the players, where there's that familiarity, that bond, that brotherhood that can span class to class. You know, every we just had a speaker come in, Jesse Hellier's in our Hall of Fame, and he graduated in 85 and he stayed in Bennett Hall, and we still have our freshmen staying in Bennett Hall. So it's like these dudes are connected 40 years later. We got our guys staying in the same door. So there's some good traditions. And I don't know, the expectations, maybe KJ, to answer, like, the expectations are really higher. And I think that's a really good thing for anybody's life, for our kids, for your teammate. Like, low expectations is not a program or a place I would want to be associated with. You want to have really high expectations, and then you work really hard to meet them. And I would say it was big shoes to fill when I first got here. I was like, man, am I really built for this? What did I get into? Like I said, I would never follow Nathan Davis, who went to six NCAA tournaments in 6 years and was a heck of a coach. But I think those high expectations, when you're built to work and you have self-belief and you can handle adversity, then it's a great place to meet those and then develop from there.
I love that. I love that sentiment, Coach. And there's one thing specifically that I want to talk about. Five coaches in a program's history, like, that's kind of unheard of when you think about, like, college basketball. Not even if you really focus on Division III, just overall Division I, Division II, Division III, you don't see that. But you've put your own mark on the legendary program that is Randolph-Macon College. So how does that feel for you to put a stamp on a program like that?
Well, it feels good. It feels like it's slipping, man. We didn't have, you know, we didn't play in a ODAC championship. We didn't get to a Sweet 16, and I don't take those things for granted. Yeah, I'm proud of it, Ruta, but I think every year, every journey's different, and now, you know, where can we win in the margins? Where can we get it going again? I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but I'm grateful for the players that have come through, because it's all about the guys that you get. I mean, this whole thing is, you know, talent is big, but talent that develops, that cares about the guy next to him, that's how you win big. Guys that stay, I know this is getting harder to talk about or say these days, but the magic happens, man, when you've got juniors and seniors that have put blood, sweat, and tears and had some tough times. Man, those guys kind of give you a little bit more than you would. And I think they get a lot from that experience of triumph, of the hero's journey, of overcoming, of slaying the dragon, whatever it is. I think the players that we've had, I'm proud of how those guys have developed and have stayed. We got 11 guys coming back from last year, which still might be less than Trinity has coming back on a championship team. So, you know, we got to be humble about it, but I'm proud, you know, that those guys are excited about their journey coming back here.
Yeah. Especially within a program like yours, retention is important, because you're doing like these player led blocks, or I heard you talk about how, like, during scout, you're not saying a word. You're having your players lead that, which you don't hear that. But if you have like transfers throughout the program, it's pretty impossible for them to pick up on concepts halfway through the year that you've been teaching to like some kids for 4 years. So retention definitely key in your program. But I wanted to talk about the ODAC a little bit. The ODAC is a really, really good league. Right now, I feel like it's kind of getting top heavy. But either way, like, every game is a battle. You got, I know Palumbo just left Guilford, but the coaches are like really good too. Kimbrough at Hampton Sydney, Nunley at Roanoke, really good coach. And I know you said players like are playing the game, they're leading, but like, I know sometimes coaching battles are like, I got to be better than this guy today, because like that can be the edge to win this game. So I'm just curious, like, what the preparation for you is, because you're a 7-time ODAC Coach of the Year in 10 seasons, which is insane. So just talk about like your favorite matchups in the ODAC, but like how you prepare for those games specifically.
Oof, man, it's a loaded question. And that doesn't even, we didn't even talk about like Dave Macedo, who won a national championship and went to the championship the following year. Dave is a stud. You know, Chris McHugh, who worked with Jay-Z, like the job that he's doing at WNL. And then there's some really good coaches where it's just harder to get, you know, maybe some studs to overcome because you got the longevity of coaches too. I mean, Palumbo before he left was 21 years, I think. Macedo's been 20 plus. I mean, I felt like I was in survival mode my first 3 years for sure. Maybe even that fourth when we finally were able to maybe turn the corner. And I would trade every one of those coach of the year for like one more ODAC championship. I feel like I'm you know, there's a gap there between the coach of the year versus and I think a lot of it has to do with maybe winning the league and coaches respecting the fact that it's a tough league. And if you win 16, you know, or if you come out on top of that, I think coaches have given respect for that more so than me being the best coach in the league. I think there's way better coaches, I would say. In terms of preparation, man, I'm still a little bit like Wooden. Wooden was a great mentor, even though I never met him. I read all this stuff. And focus more on yourself than you do on the other team. Not to say that we don't, because we are definitely scout-based in a lot of ways. But just trying to get our guys to be the best that we can be at what we do, which don't beat ourselves. Bill Belichick, big thing. But Coach Beilein was the same way. If you look at our numbers, it's like, hey, let's just not turn it over. Let's not give that team an easy one. Let's not let them make them feel like they can guard us. Let's get a shot every time. Let's make sure we're touching the paint and getting a quality shot every time, going inside out with some of those looks. So I'd say focus on ourselves is big and how we can play to strengths, how we can get our defense. We do have a defensive identity, so how we can do our best to take away what other teams do well. But then I would say, man, the league has just made me better. You know, and even I could use CNU as an example, but Johnny Kay has been to three Final Fours down there at Christopher Newport. When I was at Salisbury for 4 years, you know, they were in the league. So I'm playing him twice a year. Then we get to RMC and it's just once a year. But man, I'm like studying how we can beat this guy. And over time, you're like, man, this baseline out of bounds, we can't guard it. All right, we got to put this in. So I do have a quick funny story because I worked Billis camp, Jay Billis at Charlotte. I don't know if you guys are familiar. And, you know, D3 coaches are working it down there. And Johnny Kay is he's like the commissioner and I'm one of the coaches. Okay. So Johnny Kay is commissioner and there's like, I think 12 coaches, maybe 16 D3 head coaches in the league. And I put in one BOB, which is basically he's watching me put it in over there because he's the commission. He's like, oh, that play looks familiar. And of course it's like the play that we stole from him that I'm using. And I'm like, man, it's the number one play that's hard to guard. Anyway. But playing against those guys, it just elevates you. Like, you're studying, man, how are we going to score against Sydney's defense, like Coach Nunley's defense? Like, and Coach Nunley is an unbelievable offensive coach. So we're like, man, how are we going to stop this dude? Like, how are we going to stop this ball screen motion? It just forces you to – we talk a lot about solving problems as a unit. Like, pickup is a great way. Military talks about after-action review. And they talk about pickup is actually a really good way because you can't, you know, just like set it up perfectly. Pickup is like there's things that you don't know. Random events are going to happen. And it's a good way to train and solve problems as a group. And that's one thing we try to do is, you know, make the guys solve problems without me always being there. And usually, man, when we lose a big game or something, it's because I got over-involved or over-coached.
Coach, it's funny you're talking about, you know, allowing the players to solve problems on their own. And this reminds me of, you know, a trainer that I've had growing up in Exeter, Mitchell Kirsch. He runs the constraint. He runs a lot of his training methods based off the constraint-led approach and like skill acquisition theories. I'm wondering, listen to your interviews. That's a big part of your program, like the constraints and allowing players, like you're saying, to kind of figure it out on the fly and be leaders. And this is kind of a sidestep from the questions we had, but can you just talk about how this influences you and how it kind of impacts your program?
Yeah, I mean, and it's not like letting me off the hook. It's not like, okay, they didn't do a good job solving problems. It's the player's fault. It's always the coach's fault. Always starts with me. But if I can empower them to have that agency where they feel like they're in charge and you know, if it was the wrong decision they made, like we live with it, we learn from it, we move on. But I'm a big on the constraints too. And I can go back to like Buzz's freshman year. And you guys know Buzz Anthony had a heck of a career here. National Player of the Year, helped us win the national championship. I learned so much from that guy. You know, I heard a coach say one time, but you learn so much from your better players or your best players. I mean, I learned more from that guy than I probably taught that guy over 4 years. But when he was a freshman, I was able to give him some things. And one of them was like, Coach, why do we have to play off two all the time? And I'm like joking with him. He's 5'10". And I'm like, well, if you can go and dunk it off one, you can always play off one if you're going to dunk it. But if not, we want to add this tool to the toolbox. I mean, so two things from the story is Buzz always had the courage. There's a lot of guys that have probably wondered why they can't play off 1 foot more. Buzz would be like, Coach, I'm curious. Let's talk about why you have this in place. So telling guys the why and even, hey, why we need them to solve problems, because I don't have – we got six timeouts on a good day. They're playing for 4 minutes. When they huddle up, you know, before, after free throw, can they talk about what just went wrong and fix it in real time? You know, because if you want to fix it at the film the next day, might be too late. So how we can better handle that stuff is big. And then Beeline was big on the film. So we learned a lot, man. We're, you know, that's where the growth mindset again comes in. And you listen to the best NBA guys. Giannis, when he was becoming MVP, was talking about how much film had helped him grow. And so I think our teams get better as the year goes on, for the most part. This year might have screwed that up, but for the most part, the more they're retaining, they just become a little bit more learners. Again, their eye starts to focus on some things. Okay, this is a ball screen D. How can we take advantage of it? And having those guys that are on the floor that can see it and feel it versus me, I don't always – like sometimes it takes me some time. Like that's invaluable.
That's big time, Coach. And you keep mentioning like last year or this past year might have like ruined stuff. Just for the viewers, they went 25-4, 15-1 in the conference, and Coach is talking like they had a horrible year. I know it didn't end the way you wanted to, but still a good year. But you mentioned Buzz Anthony, and Ruda and I, we were at the TBT tournament, one of the sites that he was playing in, and I was like, yo, his basketball IQ is high level. Like just the reads that he was picking apart off like a pick and roll, it was crazy. So I'm just kind of curious, like, if you could talk about coaching him, but when you realize like a lot of what I need to do is just let Buzz Anthony be free.
Oh man. Yeah. Like, I think it only took a couple months. Now, similar to Steph Curry, if you guys remember when he had like 10 turnovers in a game his freshman year, and bounced back from that, Buzz did have like 9 turnovers in a game at, I'm drawing a blank on it, but there was a tournament in Pennsylvania, and dude had 9 turnovers, like it close to a double-double that first year. But then we played Hobart in December, and he took over the game late. And basically, by that time of his freshman year, he was, if you add the defensive stuff too, he was our best player as a freshman. Didn't get Rookie of the Year. That really left a mark, fired him up. He had this incredible summer. And came back and got player of the year as a sophomore. Mm-hmm. Went from no recognition on any of the teams, even though I thought he was our best player. They picked 2 other guys from our team. So that was interesting. I think coaches might take that back if they could do it again. Fired that dude up. Now, don't poke the bear, so to speak. But, man, he was – I mean, we could spend a whole podcast. We don't have time for it. But even for the viewers or for young guys like you or KJ, you get to keep playing possibly like – here's one thing Buzz did, man. That guy, they talk about Jordan and Kobe's focus and how like present he was. Remember Jordan, this was before like cell phones. So Jordan was really present. Remember from The Last Dance?
Yeah.
Like Buzz is incredibly present. A little bit of an old soul and like big on people, relationship stuff, not married to his phone. And he was just all in on, man, how do I win? How do I win here? I mean, I remember freshman year, and I could go story after story, but freshman year, I'm walking back of the bus before a game, and he's looking at the NCAA stat page. And I'm like, how do you even know about this page? Like, how did you find this page? Like, well, here he is. He's checking the opponents, their stats. Like, he was looking for an edge. Buzz taped up, like, the goals that he had for his freshman year. He taped up the school's assist record. Like he had that on his mirror. So I think what's in your mirror sometimes, what you see every day, you can bring to life. And then I would say, I tell guys this, there's a lot of guys that want to be a pro, but they don't start training like it till their senior year. You know, when it becomes real, then they have the urgency. Mm-hmm. He started training as a freshman, like taped the stuff up, really intentional about his work. Really like didn't feel like he was doing us any favors, even though he probably could have played up. Not probably. He could have played up.
Yeah.
He could have moved. And that was a little before guys were just entering the portal. But he really cared about winning and bringing a championship to here. And the journey, like I told him, he brought a lot of basketball joy to the community. Mm. He helped, let's say, the group of seniors when he was a sophomore. Like that, they hadn't experienced a championship. And they called it the Buzz Anthony effect. Like that's what the players termed it. But he brought a championship and joy to that group that we probably wouldn't have experienced otherwise. So sometimes being that big fish, that big dog, you can really impact the joy and the success that people have. And I think that's one thing that's getting left out when guys are chasing some money or chasing the level. Like, man, how can you go make a difference in other people, be a light for other people? But anyway, the other thing I would say with Buzz is how invested he was as a teammate. And he had to grow in this process, like, because he started the, at the time we called them Kobe workouts, where in the preseason, not his freshman year, sophomore year, he heard Kobe did his nighttime workouts. So basically in between lift and pickup Saturday, he would come in and work out 9 o'clock at night, 2 in the morning, 7 in the morning, and get 3 workouts in between the lift and the pickup. You guys with me? Yeah. I know I'm rattling it off.
No, I'm following.
Yeah. And he'd get his roommate to come in at night. And he might get another guy to come in at the morning session, but he started to get frustrated because he would offer it and then, you know, but could never get anybody to do all three with him. And I'm like, man, I don't know, Buzz, if I would have, like, I value my sleep. Like, I wake up early and all. Like, I could be the 7 a.m., but that 2 a.m., I don't know. But that was his, like, he wanted to earn the edge. And, but we go back to, and I know, you guys mentioned that the national championship in 2022, that year preseason, we were invested going in. I'm like, Buzz, I know you put a lot of time into your game, but you got to put more time into your teammates, because it doesn't matter if you get better at this point. Like, you need Josh to get better, Miles to get better, Ian to get better. What are you doing to help those guys get better? Where are you at in your leadership journey? So he even, like, and I just pulled up his goals. Like, I still have my Buzz Anthony file, and the goals after his sophomore year was lunch with every player in the spring, lunch with every new player in the fall, call all the rookies, guys that he hadn't even played with yet, once a month every Sunday in the summer. Like, the dude was just really, and this was after his sophomore year, intentional. And then he's like, Coach, how can I get some more people in there? All right, let's take a piece of paper and let's draw who would run through a wall for you right now. And there might be like 3 names. And we're like, all right, who's the next most likely? And we'd put the list of everybody else on the other side of the page. All right, next most likely guy, you got to get lunch with that dude, and we got to get him over to this side of the sheet. And I think, like, that was his approach, like, one by one, getting a group to run through the wall for that dude. I hope I didn't go off tangent with that, and I hope it's helpful to somebody, but those are some things. So back to, like, that year, we had 11 of our 15 did all 3 workouts all 6 weeks of the preseason. So it's like, we were talented, yes, but we had a player-led approach and focus that was going to be tough to beat. And it's really hard, like KJ, even though guys are doing the Kurt, we call them Kurt X workouts, they're still doing it. It's still about the heart that you do it with, you know, and Buzz really had a heart for it that guys knew. So you can still do that stuff, but go through the motions and it not create the most value.
Coach, it's honestly, like, when – if you're a real, like, D3 hooper and you really, like, want to study the game, like, every player should know about, one, obviously Randolph-Macon College and in your time there, but also Buzz Anthony's career. Like, he had a real impact on Division III. Just, you know, like, guys still talk about him to this day. Like, I remember watching him play last year, like, KJ's mentioned at TBT, and I'm like, yo, that's Buzz Anthony. Like, what the heck? Like, that's D3 royalty right there. So, definitely, well, like, you too, like I said.
Really cool story. I mean, Adam Brazel, player of the year in the ODAC. I mean, he studied Buzz. He had the humility to just study that dude. Mm-hmm. And we're watching him, and I'm like, I'm pissed at Buzz this year because I'm like, you know, you created this monster. Brazel now kicked our butt 2 years.
Adam, and I mean, tough.
He drilled us. He kicked our tail like no one has probably since I've been here. I'm still mad about it, man. My blood pressure just went up if you had the thing on. But it was like now I know what it feels like to go against Buzz, perhaps, too, like where, like, yeah, it doesn't matter what you do. Like, he was on our scouting report, and he still kicked our tail. But Buzz, without leaving, so how about the way he got overseas was, I'm friends with Joe Crispin. Joe Crispin played 10 years. He was coaching at Rowan at the time. That's my guy. Joe, what do we do, man? I know it's really hard to go from D3 to being a pro. And Buzz wants to coach. So it's like if he didn't happen, he's ready to get into coaching. So Joe calls his agent, Dave Gassman. Dave is going to watch the film for Joe Crispin, who was a 10-year pro. Joe's like, I played against this dude. This dude can play. Dave watches the film and is like, I don't represent D3 guys, but I don't see him as a D3 guy. This guy's better than some D1 guards that I've represented. I think he can have a 10-year career. I'm willing to represent him. And that's how Buzz got his first contract. Dave's still representing him. So it's neat. So people tell you, you got to move up, and maybe it does help in certain situations, but for that guy to be able to stay, have the loyalty, met his wife here, you know, he and Becca have a baby girl now. It's neat. Like, he just signed a 2-year deal, last year. So he's going into year 4. He charted his own path. And he always has. And yeah, I think it's worth, man, if you guys can ever get him, I'm sure he'd do it if you wanted to have him on the pod someday.
For sure. Definitely. Buzz, if you're listening, definitely got to hop on the pod, my guy. And, you know, what you're speaking to, Coach, is like the overall, like, you know, one, the connections that you make in college, like it's supposed to be the best time of your life when you're in college. Right. So, you know, like I've talked about on the podcast before, the viewers will know, like, I've loved my college basketball experience playing at Utica. I met a lot of my best friends. I met KJ through, you know, coming here, playing basketball at Utica, like, cause he plays at Alfred University, which is, you know, in the same conference as us. So definitely great, you know, great experiences. I wanted to talk specifically, I wanted to have, you know, a larger basketball conversation, like a basketball nerd conversation with you. Cause really, I feel like anyone that loves basketball is going to enjoy this episode, cause you've had a lot of different like gems. And one thing specifically that I want to talk about is your closeouts and your philosophy on closeouts. Cause you talk about how that basically every player doesn't shoot the same. So why do we have to close out the same? Like, those closeouts should be different for those players. Yeah. So I'm wondering, how do you both like teach your players, like, you know, all right, we want to close out on this guy this way, or how do you both teach them, but how do you also scout? Like, how does a scouting process work where it's like, okay, this is the closeout we need for this guy? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, we'll lose all the non-basketball nerds, or all the offensive guys are like, all right, I'm out. Let me take a 5-minute break. But you know, I mean, I got a passion for the defensive side, and I love offense too now. But all I would say is, let's say Ruta is a big time shooter. We got to run him off the arc. So we call you an A shooter, and basically you better not let him get it off, because, you know, you can look at the numbers and even just guys getting it off, like, you're going to make tough shots. It doesn't matter if I got a contest there. If you were able to get it, you're a shot maker. So we definitely, now we can't just hug you and not be in the gap sometimes. Cause what if KJ's a big time driver? Oh, we're just going to let KJ play at the rim because Ruta's a big time shooter. Like, now if Buzz can guard KJ and win the matchup, then maybe I can be closer to Ruta. It goes back to, we probably have a blended defensive philosophy. And even to the point of like, all right, Ian, let's take Ian. He comes to mind because this is where I was talking about it with Chris on Immersion. It's like, we needed Ian on the floor. Everybody knew it. 6'7", big-time shooter, like big-time skill set. We don't win a national championship without Ian, who was a 4-year guy. But, you know, the reason that he didn't go Division I or get a scholarship is guys were concerned about his foot speed. And, you know, the things that will keep you from a D1 scholarship will also keep maybe you from getting on the floor for 32 minutes or helping us win the national championship. Could be. So for him, it's like, man, he's a pleaser. He's trying to do the right thing. It's not like he's even lazy. He wants to get the closeout. He wants to get the stop. So instead of yelling at him, and we do a lot of peer pressure. We don't yell. I mean, but we got peer pressure stuff like, hey, you got to get 3 stops in a row or you're going to stay on D. So we have a drill, and, you know, in your coaching career, I highly recommend, well, whether it doesn't matter the drill, but if it's 2-on-2 and they don't have the constraint of space, it's really hard to get a stop against good offensive players, right? Yeah. What if they have to get 3 stops in a row and the offense keeps coming in fresh and there's really good offensive players? 10 minutes on D. So what would happen is I would put 2 guys that we need on offense, but I put them on D. Now, it's not just to make them feel terrible. Like, what if they get some stops? What if I can stop KJ? I can start to build some confidence. If I can stop Buzz, I can build some confidence. So it's twofold. But if you're not committed, you will get exposed. If you can't handle adversity, if you can't handle getting scored on, if you can't move on to the next play, man, it's going to be a long day for you. And, I mean, I've felt sorry for some guys. And, all right, like, hey, next group in. Like, these guys can't get a stop. Go run a lap. Done watching them play defense. Like, so there's a lot of buttons that you can push within that. But back to the original question is, like, he wanted to do it. How do we help him instead of just, like, making him feel exposed? So it was more like, all right, you're not getting close enough. So get a little bit closer. Stick that foot in the ground. You got the early high hand is big. Okay, so early high hand, Ruda thinks he's got to drive it. Now he's driving it. Now you got to, like, basically plant that foot and run with him or run to a spot, and we'd have more success. And, hey, we want Ian to play, so he may get beat off the bounce. Guys got to be more engaged, and we might need to be helping a little bit more when he's on the floor or his guy has the ball. That's probably, like, there's not anything. It's like, hey, he can't shoot it. And then be in the play when he drives. Like, those are the, like, almost the teaching points. And then it's like, play a lot of one-on-one and two-on-two and figure out how you can do it. Really slow it down, just like you would offensively. Just like you would say, all right, I'm not making shots. What is it? Is it my fingers? Is it my elbow? Is it my follow-through? Like, you slow it down. Kobe would slow down his moves. Slow down the defense. Like, let's walk through. Why can't you get a stop? So I would say, it's the attention to detail on that side of the floor, or even specifically to a closeout, that helped us maybe build some more confidence in a guy that was just getting scored on.
Yeah, that's big time. And just to, for another viewer context, like, I was looking at some statistics, and team shot 27.3% from three against you guys this year, which is, they're not making any threes, which is going to set you guys apart ultimately. And real quick, like, a lot of your drills, I feel like you can kind of pick out which guys are going to be good and which guys aren't. For like, example, this year, actually, Alfred, we lost by 50 one game, like, completely unacceptable. And the next day in practice, coach did, like, one of those 3-on-3, get three stops until you're done. And then You could really tell, like, who's like, I can't do this anymore. And it's just like, this is why we're losing by 50, is because we got people on the team that's doing stuff like that. So that's special. But real quick, like, so if a player ultimately, like, you're just not going to be good at defense, is that like a guy who, one, is that possible, someone that's not good at defense? Because I think you said some people get let off the hook, like, they don't realize how much they have. But also, like, if they just ultimately not getting stops, like, is that someone you just can't play? Because I know you're big on defense, but talk about that.
Depends on how good they are on offense. Depends on the need that you have at that position too. Like, because 6'7" shooter, he may not be the best defender, but it's kind of like that net rating, that plus minus. Because, man, he's buying you gravity, he's buying you space. Buzz can get to the rim more. I think, if you have a superpower, which we talk a lot about at the offensive end, then maybe – now, not lack of effort. Like, lack of effort is always going to get you – on the bench. And a lack of physicality too, I'm not a big fan of, but some guys are just, you know, they're a little slighter. So, you know, they might be giving their all, but you know, you play against a 190-pound guard, like, it may not, you may lose a couple battles. So I think, I don't know. Does that answer your question, KJ, terms of, we can, I mean, a lot of tall shooters aren't going to be great defenders. So if you want some tall shooting in your program, you better find a way to get those guys on the floor. I think it's making sure your team understands too, like, hey, this is how we're going to win. And so now they're not in the locker room like, man, why is that dude playing? It's like, yeah, we have a defensive identity, but it also has to balance out. We got to be able to score points too, because, you know, we know whoever has the most points at the end of the game wins. Yeah. Doesn't matter if we can hold teams to 55 if we can't score 50, you know? And I don't know if we do have time, guys, I'm curious to ask you guys a couple questions, not to flip it. We may not get through all the questions that you have.
No, ask us if you'd like.
Yeah.
Have you guys interviewed each other before, like, in terms of, like, on a podcast? Like, I haven't gone back to see that far if you did.
We did. It was like a 15-20 minute thing. Just like, what do you bring into the podcast? Because I started this by myself and then Ruta joined. So it was just like, the viewers getting to know him, not really about basketball, if that's what you were wondering.
So anyone starting a podcast and adding good and asking the quality questions that you guys have, all right, and building this thing like you guys have out of nothing, like to me, you guys have initiative, self-starters, work ethic is there. I got to see KJ's like academic background. Ruta, I haven't seen yours. You're probably a stud too, would be my guess. But like, you know, just high achievers is what I'm taking from this. So part of my question is, because I'm still like, I'm battling this every single day. Maybe you guys can teach me something, because finding two guys that are starting a podcast while they're still in college, you know, they've separated themselves in a way. How do you, let's say in recruiting, you guys are on the player side of it. What are some things that you've noticed about guys that come in for a visit? I don't know if it's questions that you ask. You guys are great question askers. How do you think you start to determine who's gonna make it as a player? Not talking about like basketball necessarily, but like who's gonna become a leader, who's gonna be invested, who's gonna help add to the culture, let's say, of a program. What would you guys say to that? Maybe KJ, you can go first.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think a big thing that I notice with recruits is, I don't want to say confidence, because sometimes it's hard. Like when I told you I went on a visit to NYU and I was still nervous, like me and the guy. So I'm not saying that, but their ability to, one, like be themselves, like, yes, this is, I'm KJ Allison. This is what I stand for. These are my values. And I'm going to be able to like tell the coach that this is what I stand for. And it's not like just taking the back seat and let the coach do all the talking. Like they're kind of leading some things. And then I also think, and this is kind of unfair, but I do think family matters. So your foundation, what, back to the, I think you can tell I'm big on values, but like, how is your family interacting with you when you're there? How are you interacting with your family? But also when you're talking to me and the guys, like, are you with your head down looking at your phone sometimes, or are you present? Like you said, Buzz Anthony, super present. So I think it's the foundational characteristics of a person that, like, when they get to a different program, they can still be that same person. It's not like they're adjusting to the culture. The culture is kind of getting adjusted because they're getting into that space, if that's a good answer.
Yeah, it's a great answer. I got some follow-up, but I want to hear from Rudo on that one too.
I mean, and to build off of that, right, like figuring out your why, because like there's a lot of stuff that like comes with basketball, right? Like when you're in college, like, you know, you have a social life, you know what I'm saying? You have school and stuff like that, but are you playing basketball because, you know, especially if you want to compete at a high level, are you playing it just because what comes with it, or are you playing because, oh no, like I love basketball. I'm like, I'm actually motivated to succeed because of X, Y, and Z, whether it be my family, whether it be my own personal goals, number one. But another thing too, last year recruits, is like having the humility to like come into a situation and being like, especially if it's a winning situation, like Randolph making college. Like I've, you know, there's been recruits in my Utica guys, if they're listening, they'll know, like there's recruits that'll come in and be like, yeah, I can't wait to come in and be the man and like take all these shots and like, and pick up, they're trying to bring the ball up when like, that's really not their game. And I'm looking at that, like you have to come in with the humility. Like I'm coming into a new situation. I'm trying to figure out how to adjust. I'm figuring out how to adjust to my teammates and like having the grace to be able to be like, how do I learn from these guys rather than being like, okay, like I'm coming in here and this is going to be my thing. Like, nah, this is our thing. I don't know if that makes sense too, but.
Yeah, no, humility's big. I always think like you guys are now 22-ish, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So KJ talking about like, you know, you're pretty confident who you are going to NYU visit. Mm-hmm. Did you feel the same as an 18-year-old on some of those visits?
Is that a rhetorical, or you were about to ask something?
No, I mean, it could be rhetorical, but let me throw that in there. But also, like, when you say family matters, what do you mean by that? Like, what questions have you found to be good around that, too, when you're talking with guys?
I'm not sure it's necessarily a question thing. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, where'd your mom go to school? And if he's like, oh, my mom didn't graduate, then it's like, oh, you're not a good kid. But I've seen parents come in and they're like, when they're watching pickup, they're analyzing them, get the game themselves too, or like saying, oh, I like this kid, his energy. So them being attentive as well. like engaged and enjoying the visit as well. I think that's big, but mostly without saying, like, because some kids don't even come with their parents. So it's just like you can kind of tell a kid's background and like how they are as a person, how they were raised based off their visit. So I'm saying more, not necessarily the question aspect, just how they're acting when they're engaging with other people and stuff like that.
So maybe this is the better question. See, I'm not as good a question asker as you guys, but there is something I'm trying to keep getting to. But your advice to high school seniors would probably be, because everybody's still kind of figuring out who they are at that point too. And in the transitional year, like you guys are about to go through another transition, maybe Ruta's 6 months away, but these transitional years are so important, interesting. You got to have confidence, but you also got to have humility. You go from being the big dog, right, KJ? You know, the transition comes with challenges. What would be your advice to that high school senior in terms of defining, man, what values do matter to you?
So I like you said, like you're transitioning. So I look back on some of my freshman year work and I'm like, I've changed a lot from then, but I think that there's a lot of not workshops, but stuff you can do online, really, that's like you can map out some of the things that you stand for. Like I did this, what matters most if you had a job, like, and there's all this thing like job security, pay, just list goes on and on. So I think there's platforms that you can use to kind of find out more about yourself.
Yeah.
But I think just like, if you look around your surrounding system, like who are my friends, who's in my family, and you can kind of learn something about yourself. Like, oh, this person is a 4.0. My best friend's a 4.0 student that studies this, and this. I take this. I value this about our relationship. What does that say about me and what I value? So I think that you can kind of be reflexive on yourself, but also like the people around you to kind of get some perspective on what you stand for.
My grandma had this saying. She was like, if you show me like three or four of your best friends and people around you, I could tell you the type of person that you want to be. Right. Yeah. So like I'm around KJ, you know what I'm saying? He's a great student, great person, and you know, he's gonna influence me to be the same. And that goes if you have Buzz Anthony as a teammate and you see him in the gym putting in work and you see the career that he's carving out for himself, you're going to be like, oh, I gotta be with this guy and I got to figure out how to get where he's at and what steps that he takes. Yeah. So that's another piece of advice too.
A good question I'd say too is like, I think this is kind of cliche, but like, tell me a time that you went through adversity and like, how did you kind of get out of it? Cause then it forces someone to be like, okay, what is adversity to me? Cause that's different for everybody. Like coach, you might go through something and I'm like, oh, that's nothing. But you're like, that was the biggest thing of my life. So that's one thing. And then also like, how did I handle it? So you can kind of see something about your values right there is I handled it using my charisma or I'm big on social justice. So I went that route. You could see some things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, love it, man. I mean, that could be a whole nother podcast, but just diving into your guys' background and how you got to this point where you're doing stuff like this. But the more players I can recruit that are doing stuff like this in their senior year, I think that does move a program forward.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like sometimes you don't even need the best basketball players. It's like, because I'm not going to sit here and act like me and Ruta are all Americans or even all conference players, but I know that if we're in a locker room, we're going to like help that program a lot. So
1,000%. Yeah. I mean, you see with the NBA, you can't just have 10 studs. Like it doesn't work, you know, get three difference makers that can get two to the ball, but then get the right guys in the right seats and guys that can impact and push other guys forward is huge, man. Then you get the sum better than the parts.
Lord. So coach, we noticed that you coached under Coach Beilein at West Virginia. You guys had a really good year that year. You went all the way to the Elite Eight. This is your graduate assistant position, which is really good experience to have to get into like college coaching. But I know he's big on language, correct? Like he wants everything visualized too. So I know you've taken that to your program a lot, and I'm big on quotes, stuff like that. So yeah. One, just talk about like your relationship with Coach Beilein first, but then second, like some of the things you're praising to your program and how you think that kind of impacts the day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, Coach is the best. Like, he's done a couple of Zooms with the team. He checks in with me after every season. He's meant a lot to me. I mean, I wouldn't be here without Coach Beilein giving me that first college job. And he jokes. I used to be like I was 12th on his list, and he'll correct me and be like, Coach, you were down like 15th on the list. But the first 14 said no. You know, former players, guys went overseas. Like, but it all worked out. So then I would say language-wise, you know, if I go to a different country and they're speaking another language, I'm getting left behind, or I'm going way slower than what everybody else is doing because I don't speak the language. And it's the same thing with like offensive, defensive, and even cultural stuff. Like, we've got our culture, our wall of cultural sayings, words.
I need to see a picture of that or something.
I got you. I will definitely send it. You know, we'll put it on a shirt and things like that. And I mean, you know, it's still words on a wall until you can bring it to life. But like, we'll say mood follows action. It's one of my favorites because, man, I don't always feel it. Like, I don't feel like running 4 miles at 5 a.m. like I did this morning. But it's like you make a commitment. Your identity is that I do what I say I'll do. That's another big one for us. Do what you say you'll do. So it's like, when you commit to something, the magic happens. But anyway, going back to the language, if we can get some of those sayings in the guy's head, I mean, even what Ruta said about what his grandma said, like, you know, show me your three friends and I'll show you who you're trying to be, like average of the five people you hang with the most. Some of it, you got to hit them with 100 times before it sinks in. Sometimes some of that stuff clicks and some of it is cheesy. I mean, Coach Beilein didn't mind, and I don't mind being cheesy with it because the cheese is what sticks. Derrick Nichols. So, I mean, that West Virginia team is loaded with people that are in basketball. I mean, Rob Summers just got the head job at Cleveland State. He was a redshirt on that team I was at. Darius Nichols is the head coach at LaSalle. You know, he was at Radford. But Darius, we talked a bunch, and it was like, yeah, that language, that cheesy, you know, the quickie to a spur to a football action is everybody in the program knows it. You can call it out, and maybe the defense doesn't know it quite as well. It just helps you move forward a little bit faster as a program, I think.
No, that's big time. And I mean, a lot of the coaches that Ruta and I have talked to, the ones that are like winners, I shouldn't say that because like everybody we've had on the pod is a winner in some way, but for like sure. the special ones like Hampton Sydney talking about they want to be standard of excellence in Division III basketball. And that's all over their platforms. It sticks with them. So, like, words are kind of getting lost, and we're focused on other things, but it's definitely special, like, what you can get from a beautiful sentence or a catchy phrase that sticks with you, and it's something you start to live by. So I definitely think that's helped you guys big time. But we're going to end this episode with Rapid Fire and Starting Five edition. So let us know you're ready for Rapid Fire.
I'm ready for it. Let's do it.
All right. So first Rapid Fire question I got for you, Coach. So in the ODAC, when I was watching some of your film, like I could see that there's a lot of different like arenas, like unique arenas in the ODAC that you don't really see like around Division III. So I'm wondering, do you have a favorite arena that you'd like to coach in besides, you know, your own Randolph-Macon College arena?
Besides Crenshaw, I mean, if I got a favorite, I'm going to go Crenshaw all day.
Yeah, got to.
Outside of that, there's some cool. I mean, Roanoke has a nice facility that we enjoy playing in. You know, Sydney's got a great home crowd every time we go there. Like, those dudes are out. That's a fun environment. Fun environment to play in. You know, when everybody's rooting against you, there's nothing like going into that arena and, you know, having some success or seeing how you do when they're going against you.
Next rapid fire question I got for you, Coach. Who has been top three funniest players that you ever coached?
Top three funniest. That's good. I mean, I can tell you number one is Corey Bays comes to mind. Corey, Maryland kid, CM Wright, 4-year guy here. Almost didn't make it as a freshman, he'll tell you. Wanted to go to Salisbury, the state school in Maryland. But ended up with us and hilarious dude, man, brought a lot of joy to every day. The one quick story with Corey Bays, to tell you, we're playing in a tournament at Messiah. This is his senior. This is his junior year. And he's a starter, and he's a guy that can make shots and double-digit score. And he is getting cooked by this shooter that they've got. Can't get a stop. And I'm like, we score. He's coming back on defense, and he's in front of our bench. And I'm like, do I got to put somebody else on him? And he looks me dead in the eye, and he's like, yes.
That's the humility right there.
And the offensive player is right there, too. And it's like, that's not the answer I'm looking for. No, you still got him. But, man, we still joke about that one. Like, as mad as I was at him, he's like, all right, coach, this is my answer to that question. If you're going to ask me, yeah, put someone else on him. It was still cracks me up thinking about it.
That's awesome. That's an awesome story. Last rapid fire question I got for you, coach. If you had to pick one former Yellow Jacket to play for you guys next season, who would it be? And if it's Buzz, maybe a different
outside of. Yeah, I mean, hard to not go with that dude. You know, because point guard, ball is in his hands, yeah, controls the game, winning defender, all that makes everybody better. But the second one, I mean, man, we've had some studs. I mean, Lamont Moore was a stud. Miles Mallory, three-time All-American, still playing in Germany himself. Second highest IQ guy behind Buzz, I would say, too, you know, and was a rim protector, set the ODAC blocks record, 50% from the field in his career, and just, you know, humble superstar. He was a stud, and then Daniel Bongay would be another close one. ODAC tournament MVP his senior year, but 29-2 his senior year. Like, he was a tremendous player and leader, and did it totally different way. Did it without really making any shots outside the paint almost, you know? But super played to his strengths and made guys better around him.
Nah, that's special. Definitely have had a lot of guys that were really good on your program. Coach, remind me, you have homework. I'm going to give you some homework for tonight, but yeah. We're going to move to the starting five edition. So if you're a coach, assemble a lineup, point guard through center, who's your lineup going to be? And this edition is going to be the highest IQ player. So not the best, the highest IQ. And just tell me what position they play in your lineup.
And this is like RMC guys? Are we talking NBA guys?
Like people that you've coached. So
people that I've coached. I got you. I mean, I do tell high school guys, like the highest IQ guys that I've been around, Buzz and Miles are 1 and 2. I would say Daniel is a close. Well, Daniel might be fifth on that list, Bongay.
Tell me what position they're playing.
Buzz is the point guard.
Yep.
Miles is the five.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put Daniel at the four. And Daniel played the three when we won it all. Then he played the four as a junior. Then he played the five as a senior because we had an injury. Mm. So dude can – at 6'4", was defending five men and getting it done. Ball screen D, post D. He was a stud. And then I would say two guys that we currently have. I'd put Jabril at the two. Jabril has been a four-year starter for us. First team all league this year. Top five in assist turnover ratio in the country. Another high IQ that knows how to attack, like spins and be a hero. We call it hero defender, but like hero is a protector of two. So a guy that can help someone else on defense. And then I would say Keyshawn Pulley, another guy that's coming back in first team all league, would be my three. But high IQ, been coached at an early age by his uncle, who's a great coach at St. Chris. He just sees the game. He's not super fast, doesn't have a burst, but can make every pass, knows when to cut, can make shots, and defensively knows how to play angles and be in the right spots.
No, that's special. Definitely, like I said, a lot of really good players. Appreciate that lineup. So the homework you got, first thing, I want top three quotes that like the program's kind of built on. Yeah. Second one, I know you're big into reading. I'm also a reader. So I need two book recommendations for the summer.
Okay.
Those are my two homework assignments for you.
I got you. Well, let me ask you real quick. Have you read the Goggins book? Can't Hurt Me?
Oh, David. No, I haven't. I haven't read any of his stuff. So.
All right. That's number one. Okay. I'll say legacy number two, but you asked me for homework. So I'll maybe come up with another two after that.
All right. Sounds good. I appreciate you. And we appreciate you getting on the pod. It's been a really good episode of Not Even D2. I hope that visit goes well later.
Yeah, appreciate you guys, man. I could talk to you guys all day. Love what you're doing. Keep it up and be in touch, man. Reach out if you ever need anything, too.
It's love. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.